Hey there, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with a positive mind, WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Today, we're bringing you some new information about something that I'm sure you're going to be interested in because we're at that time in life, you know. We're at a time in life where everybody is considering trying to conserve their energy. Trying to conserve your resources, you know. You got declining house prices, you have rising job layoffs, skyrocketing prices, oil costs, major credit crunch. And it's kind of at the point where people are saying we have to tighten our belts somehow and we're going to have to pull it in a little. Business is not going to be as good. If we're in business, the job may not have the benefits. Now, that all leads you to a thing of saying, how will I conserve my energy? How will I conserve my resources? And that leads you to the issue of self-discipline. Now, there we are, self-discipline, that bugaboo, that terrible phrase, self-control, self-discipline. Good people have it, bad people don't. That's the way it seems, doesn't it? I mean, throughout history, we reward the people who have got self-discipline because they are the builders. They limit their ability, they limit their distractions. They stay single-focused. They work ahead. They strive ahead. They don't get too taken off path. And the most successful people I know have extraordinary self-discipline. So self-discipline must be good, right? Well, on the other hand, the unhappiest people I know have self-discipline. Because even though they have it, they do it at the cost of all other emotions. We will stay on track. We will not be thrown off track by certain things, especially emotions. So people with very high self-discipline usually lack in the depth of emotions. Now, what does that do to you? Well, you know, you could get a better house. If you have self-discipline, you could have a nicer car. You could have a better family. You could take them to the proper schools. You know, you could do all the right things, and you could have a better headstone when you die. Or you could have fun. You could play a little along the way. You could do both. So the question becomes, how can we use, and how could we use what we know about self-discipline so that self-discipline doesn't become this great difficulty of having to do something and struggling over and over again? And why is it sometimes so hard to do things? There are certain people, the people who are very organized, in general, perfectionists, people who are reformers. You see them, you know, everything is, they like to line up the ducks. They like everything to be in order. Order is their friend. They love order. They hate chaos. So these kind of people, the people who really are always very disciplined, generally are also teachers. They are also always telling people what to do. So I'll tell you how you should line up your ducks. And then I'll give you some nice phrases about it. If only you do this, then this will happen. If only. Those are good people, right? Well, you know, let's think about that twice. Those people, the people who are the most disciplined, generally wind up being, sometimes become religious leaders. Because what does religion teach you except self-discipline? Don't touch yourself, right? Don't let your eye wander. Thou shalt not. Aren't the Ten Commandments a document of self-discipline? Absolutely. Not that there's anything wrong with it, because it's kind of a good guideline, but thou shalt not, thou shalt not, thou shalt not. You wouldn't have to say thou shalt not if you didn't have the inkling to do it. The druther. You know, my druthers is to commit sin, but I shalt not. The word druther, by the way, just in case you're curious, comes from the phrase I'd rather. See, they put the two words together. I'd rather became druther. So, going back, this is Armand DeMille with you with a positive mind. I'm going to give you some information about discipline that's going to shock you, surprise you, delight you, entice you, and make you a successful person in your chosen profession. Or close. The people with the most self-discipline, my friends, those are the ones who have the greatest amount of pimples. What I mean is they have the outburst. So when you get somebody who's very disciplined and they become a preacher, suddenly you can't trust the little kids in the room alone with them. You know, if they're preaching too much, if they're preaching, people who preach too much, perfectionism and self-control, generally are people who are trying to fix something broken inside of themselves. And they're doing it by preaching to other people. So they're disciplining others as a way of disciplining themselves. But you have to be careful because there's always some little part leaks out. And it winds up, when I say pimples, it like leaks out and it shows you that all's not so kosher in heaven. This is Armand DeMille, but here's what we were learning, okay? We're learning that the brain has a limited capacity for self-regulation. Self-regulation is exerting willpower in one area. So let's say how many times have you had New Year's resolution? And you make 10 of them. I'm going to stop drinking, I'm going to stop smoking, I'm going to stop eating, I'm going to stop dating, I'm going to stop sexing, I'm going to stop all these things. And you tell your therapist, and your therapist says, that's too many. Why don't you do one of them? Okay, I'll stop going to school. No, not that one. No, why don't you just do one? Do one self-discipline. Give yourself one test. Now, the therapists who have over the years known to tell you that if you have too many things going, you're probably not going to do well, they didn't know how well-based in science what they're saying is. You see, the brain has this limited capacity, and it takes a certain amount of chemistry to get self-discipline going in your brain. There's a combination. Somewhere between the serotonin and the sugar, there seems to be some balance of what is required for you to exercise that which is not normal, which means self-discipline. So let's say you look at a piece of food and you want to eat it. And you know you're going to get fat, so you say, I won't eat it. At that moment, a number of things happened in your brain. First, there was a chemical reaction. First, you saw the food. First, you were attracted. Now you said no. Now another thing happens in your brain. It's got to turn off the sensation. Mostly what they're finding is that self-discipline has a lot to do with insulin and sugar and how they run in balance in the mind. But when you use energy to discipline one part of you, it depletes the energy from the other parts of your brain. So, the brain store of willpower is depleted when people control their thoughts, their feelings, their impulses, when they modify their behavior in pursuit of goals. There's a psychologist, Roy Baumeister, found that people who successfully accomplish one task requiring self-control are less persistent on the second, seemingly unrelated task. In one pioneering study, some people were asked to eat radishes while they were trying to solve a puzzle, and other people were given cookies while they were trying to solve the puzzle. Who do you think quit first? The people eating the radishes. Because there were two forms of self-discipline, solving the problem and eating the radishes. The cookie eaters, they stayed with their product. People who have to exercise two forms of self-discipline at the same time very often find neither is possible. We used to learn something, a thing called retroactive inhibition and proactive inhibition, which had to do with if you're trying to learn a task. Let's say you're trying to learn French, and you want to learn to speak French. They suggested that what you do is if you're going to study courses, if you're in high school or college and you're studying, study your French. And the next thing you should study should be significantly different, because if it's the same, like if you study English, which is similar to French, you're going to wind up confusing the two. And they call that proactive inhibition. And what that means is you can't remember the first one as well, and you don't remember the second one. They get confused because you're studying French and English. However, if you study French and math, then they find that you can retain both because they're two different sources. See? So similarities can either inhibit each other or prohibit each other. One will make it either better or make it worse. So in trying to study a task, the idea is to simplify, stay in one task. But keep in mind, the mind's capacity for self-discipline is limited to spurts from most people. Spurts. Now, unless you're a perfectionist, then you are just one big spurt. See, then you just spurtify the world. You just discipline everything. Everything is in order. Everything's where it belongs. Don't move my cheese. You know, it's like, okay, this is the way life is. That's one kind of person. But if you're somebody like everybody else who says, you know, life is full of joy. I don't want to go to school. I don't want to go to work. I want to play. You give yourself something in the middle. You take vacations. You take some extra breaks. You take a walk around the block. You do something to kind of feed yourself because nobody likes to be put in a box. However, when you want a self-discipline, like if you want to exercise, stick with one task. Here's what happens. What limits willpower? So I said blood sugar. The brain cells use blood sugar as their main energy source and cannot do without it for even a few minutes. Most cognitive functions are unaffected by minor blood sugar fluctuations over the course of a day. But planning and self-control are sensitive to these small changes. Exerting self-control lowers your blood sugar, which reduces the capacity for further self-control. So get this. It lowers your blood sugar because you're doing a thing. You're exercising self-control. People who drink a glass of lemonade between completing one's task require self-control and beginning a second one perform equally well on both tasks. So people who drink a glass of lemonade while they're trying to discipline themselves and learn something, something happens because they're keeping the sugar going. Make that diet lemonade, and they're nowhere nearly as good at the task. It's kind of the proof that we're talking about sugar levels, you know. Foods that persistently elevate blood levels, like those containing protein or complex carbohydrates, they might enhance willpower for longer periods. But in the short term, you should spend your budget of self-discipline wisely. Now, here's what they suggest. One of the things you don't want to do is, if you know you're going to discipline yourself, don't pre-discipline yourself. An example of that is, let's say you're going to a party where you know you want to limit the number of drinks you're going to have. Now, going to a party where people are drinking, and you knowing that you're a drinker and you like to drink, and you know you're going to limit the amount of drinks that you're going to have, already means you're going to go to a party, you're going to be in a stressful social situation, and you're not going to drink, or you're going to drink very little. So the question becomes what to do about it. And one of the things that you have to do, one of the things that you would do is you would be careful about, on the way to the party, the thing you don't want to do is do something that would require more self-discipline. Like, you don't want to go walking past a bunch of shops where you want to buy clothing. Because if you're going to buy the clothing, you know, and you're going to discipline yourself and stop yourself from buying, you've exhausted your self-discipline. Then by the time you get up to the place where you're going to buy, where you're going to finally go to the party, where you're not going to drink, your self-discipline has been used. See, you think it's kind of easy, self-discipline. You think it's kind of just a matter of putting it in control. Why is it so easy for some people? I was searching it out, and I ran across something by a guy named Dan Duncan. I couldn't believe I was listening to this. I believe this is religious, but take a listen. Listen to this.
If there are distractions near to sidetrack me, I'll stick to the promise I have made. Self-discipline will keep me on the way.
there are distractions near to sidetrack me, I'll stick to the promise I have made. Self-discipline will keep me on the way.
Amazing, right? It's part of a children's series. We want to teach kids about self-discipline. And of course, as you hear it, you could practically hear the religious fervor behind it. You know, Dan Duncan. So just searching up self-discipline, I had this other funny experience, and I thought you might enjoy this. Get ready, prepare your ears, because on another level, when you looked up self-discipline, here's what another interpretation of self-discipline by people who never discipline anything. Imagine that. I want you to think about heavy metal. Heavy metal is kind of about get off the edges. There will be no self-discipline. That's what heavy metal is. Heavy metal is we're going to go off the edge. And I'm going to play you just a little bit of it because I know it's going to hurt your ears, many of you. But I kind of enjoy it because it's so outrageous. You know what I mean? It's so clearly. Listen to this. That's Come to Me, My Melancholy Baby by Beneath the Sky. This is Armand DeMille with you. It's a positive mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. We are bringing you some very interesting stuff today, and part of what's going on here is that we are talking about self-discipline and the value of self-discipline, if it is, but how difficult it is. So now, here we are. We're talking about the fact that if you have a certain level of it, you have to be careful. You don't want to use it up too much. If you need to study for a big exam, it might be smart to let the housekeeping slide to conserve your willpower for the more important job. Don't do too many things at once. It might be counterproductive to work towards multiple goals at the same time if your willpower cannot cover all the efforts that are required. Stick with one goal. And stick with it because you know chemically it's going to be better for you to achieve one thing than to do many. Focusing on success is important because willpower can grow in the long term. And willpower, believe it or not, is like a muscle. You use it over time. The idea of exercising willpower is like, it's like you eventually, the more you do it, the better you're at it. You know it with exercise. You know it when you go to the gym. The more you use that willpower, the more you use your willpower muscle. And the willpower muscle in general does develop. In psychological studies, even when something as simple as using your non-dominant hand to brush your teeth for 2 weeks. Got that? So you use your left hand to brush your teeth for 2 weeks. And you'll find that your discipline, just the discipline of doing that, using your left hand, increases your ability to use willpower. We love science. People who stick to an exercise program for 2 months reduce their impulse spending, reduce their junk food intake, they reduce their alcohol use and smoking, not because they're getting healthier, but because their will is stronger. They also study more, watch less television, and do more housework. Other forms of willpower training, like studying money, money management classes, that works as well. Now, nobody knows why willpower can grow with practice, but it must reflect some biological change in the brain. I think it's the neurons in the frontal cortex which are responsible for planning behavior, or it's in that sneaky anterior cingulate gyrus which we have, which is associated with cognitive control. But either way, one of the things you want to know about yourself is you're not bad because you don't have discipline. It's not a bad thing. And kids, young children, when they have too much going on in their brain and they're so filled with anxiety and hormones running all over the place, when that's taken place, It's amazing. I mean, how do you expect them to discipline themselves? This whole idea of ADD is all about, you know, a child cannot discipline the input in their mind. There's so much stuff. So, have mercy on the non-disciplined. Have mercy on yourself when you don't have the discipline. And if you have too much discipline, relax a little bit. We're going to take your calls. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. 212-209-2900. I'd like to hear from you about this issue of self-discipline. Of course, you know, it's always easy for people to preach about it. You know, maybe in love. Self-discipline in love. What a brutal thing. I won't call. I will call. I won't think about him. I will think about him. I won't think about her. I won't. You know, self-discipline with sex. Ush. Terrible. Imagine being filled with such raging hormones. And then it's your last moment and you're trying to control yourself. You know, it's such an amazing thing. Amazing how what people have to go through or go through. I don't think there are many animals that have self-discipline built in. I mean, they do. If you're a squirrel and you get a nut and you put your nut in your tree and you hide it for the winter, that's some self-discipline. Why am I not eating my nuts now? You know, because I'm going to save them for later. That's self-discipline. But in general, nature has built into most animals a hormonal signal that tells you you don't have to or you do have to discipline. For example, with sex. Most females are ready and go into estrus. They go into a condition that says, I'm ready for sex. And then the males who want to have sex, they're not always ready. They're ready when they get this estrus, when they see a female in estrus. So they're not disciplining themselves all the time. They're not holding themselves back. Nature gives them signals, says, okay, now. And they say, now. Only humans have learned to discipline around the issue of sex and around the issue of having hidden estrus, you know, about women who are not always ready or not ready as predictable. 212-209-2900. Let's take a call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Mr. DeMille. How are you, sir?
Good.
Daryl McPherson from the Bronx.
Hi, Daryl.
Oh, I'd like to say I'm giddy, but I'm not. With regard to sex, you know, like, I really, 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 really used to enjoy sex until sort of money matters got in the way. And when my financial production went down, I find it almost impossible to engage responsibly. If that makes any kind of sense.
No, if you would, without getting a little too graphic, just take, what do you mean engage responsibly?
Oh, just have sex at all. Because if I'm going to have sex with someone, I really think that it's a bonding, it's an opening, a religious experience, put it that way.
Okay, what about masturbating?
No.
No, you don't feel that either?
No, as a matter of fact, right now, it takes a lot to get me even close to sexually excited.
So here's what you're saying. You're saying that financial pressures,
yes,
and the pressures on your mind have led you to a place where you're beginning to doubt yourself. And the doubting that you have of yourself and your ability and your potency has kind of led you to a depression. What I'm hearing from you is you're describing depression. And depression kind of leads to an apathetic feeling about things like sex and sensuality. You don't feel it because you're being beaten. You know, you've been pushing your head up against the ceiling, trying hard to make things work. How tough has it been? What's your field?
Currently, I retired about 3 years ago, so I'm looking to do 3 internet businesses. The challenge is that this is good. This may sound, well, I'll just say it. When I attempt to do business, since this is a capitalist society, I'm using the challenge of being an African-American male in this society to not do business because I don't want to contribute to the oppression of the Iraqis being slaughtered by the Americans. I was also in Vietnam for a while. I mean, in the Vietnam era for a while. I mean, if you can get that kind of a logic.
Sure,
logic.
I hear you.
And the challenge for me is that I understand even to do the good things I want to do, I need to be productive. And I'm willing to talk on the phone. I'm willing to do some internet business as long as I don't have to walk through the door and interact with people, because my thought is that my boundaries for their pain is like really not strong enough.
Are you afraid of your own anger?
Oh, definitely.
You know, you're afraid of it. You like feel this kind of rage. Let me ask you one thing. It's going to be a small thing, and you know me you know me, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so you know I'm going to ask you one of those big questions.
It's okay.
Here it comes. You ready?
I'm ready.
Bare your soul. Here it comes. What happened with your father?
You know, he is in some process of dealing with a cancer. And when I attempted to reach out to him, it's a chore because he needs to stay what I call on. In order for his self-protection, he needs to be on.
And so it's very challenging. He is very much like the very thing you object to in life, this kind of phony positioning. Even though you know it's a sickness and you'd like to work with it, I mean, the frustration you feel with your father very clearly echoes the frustration you feel with industry and the world that you're feeling with now. And, of course, that leaves you feeling powerless and, in its own way, impotent.
Can I add one more to that?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm angry at him because he's my daddy and he's supposed to help me.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. You're so right.
Hey,
or even welcome you. Or even welcome you so that you could help him.
Yeah.
You know, even welcome you.
Yeah.
And that little bit of anger and aggression that you feel, that thing, it just becomes like toxic. It goes inside of you and it kind of spins around and then it becomes invisible.
Not at all, man. What do I do? I hate nervous laughter.
It's okay.
I used to love it until they explained it to me, and now
it's okay.
I don't want to hide anymore, Armand. I want to be out there. I want to do...
Daryl, you need a target. You know, there's a woman I work with. Her name is Judy Silverstein. She works at getting people to target the right enemy and deal with it. And she does it in a very dramatic, short-term way.
If I call the office, I can...
Ask her, or we'll set it up. It's something that you should do. She's so good at doing that. Because she just directs stuff where it belongs and does it dramatically enough to free you from the toxic effect of it laying insipid, invisible, somewhere inside you, controlling everything you do.
What I can do is I can guarantee it's worth everybody's while to get me productive.
Yeah, I'm sure about
that. I'll give a call right now.
I'm sure about that because you're a good guy, you know, and I really appreciate you. You're somebody who's got a lot to give. Thanks for your heart. Thanks
for
calling.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
Stay blessed and highly favored, and I'll be in touch.
Good. Nice. Such an honest man. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll take more of your calls. A little unusual music for you as well today. So we'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes.
I live in this country now. I'm called by this name. I speak this language. It's not quite the same. For no other reason than this, it's my home. And the places I used to be, far from are gone. Travel this long, you just have to go on. Don't even look back to see how far you've come. Though your body is bending under the load, there is nowhere to stop anywhere on this road. Thank you.
called Anywhere on This Road by Lhasa, L-H-A-S-A. An intriguing Portuguese, I think. Armand DeMille here with you at the Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial here in New York City. Talking to you about self-discipline. Self-discipline, self-control, self-inhibition, self-sacrifice, self-everything, you know? Oh, what a poor thing to do to the self. You know, leave me alone. What do you mean I got to do this? What do you mean, well, you do, you know? And we've got to develop that self-discipline muscle because it's good for us to develop a self-discipline muscle. Now, even if you're wild, even if you want to live out in nature, you develop self-discipline muscles. You know, I'm going to not make this move. I'm going to conserve my wood that I'm using. But there are people who are just born with so much energy that they just can't do it. It's so hard to organize things. Your poor mind. I mean, you were meant to be spinning around. You were meant to be a dancer. You were meant to be, you know, a wonderful person in this world, and you should be celebrated too. Unfortunately, the world comes along and says, if you're going to be a spinner and you're going to be disorganized and you're going to be wild and filled with energy, you better team up with somebody who is controlling and who is on the ground. So very often they get married. You get the wild person filled with energy and creative thought gets married to the person who is solid as a rock. Now, being solid as a rock is not fun because, you know, rocks, they don't laugh. You know, rocks, they sit around, they don't do a thing. So what you want to do is you want to have somebody childlike or somebody playful who could move you a little bit. And you find the rock gets a chance to smile. So rocky people usually get together with wild people. And wild people look for rocky people because the wild people want to be solid and the rocky people want to be looser. And then what happens, which is really interesting, is they get together and they love each other and they have a great time. And the rocky person, the one who is solid and the planner and self-disciplined, he just loves how wild she is and the sex and the play and all that stuff. And then she loves how secure he is and how he plans everything and he gets the theater tickets in advance and he gets the first row, third row, he gets... always gets into the restaurant. He makes all the reservations. He shows up on time. She loves that because she's having a good time, not missing all these things she used to miss. And then they get together and then they get married. And now they're married and you have the person with great self-discipline and the person with no self-discipline. They start trying to change each other. And the person with no self-discipline keeps telling the partner who is disciplined, you got to loosen up. You have to be looser, and the person who is disciplined tells the other person you've got to become more self-disciplined. And you hear things like he says, make a list. You know, he's angry at his wife now because she's disorganized. I want you to write it down in a list. Make a list. And he starts giving her lessons like she's some kind of a child. And then they come to see me. Then they come in as a couple and they say, we don't know what went wrong here, but this marriage is terrible. And I remind them that what they love about each other is not what they're fighting about. What they love about each other is that they're different, that they had a collaboration of two different people. So self-discipline is not something that's God-given, nor is it something that's a punishment for being evil if you don't have it, you know? It's just chemistry, my friends. It's up in your brain. You get it. It's great. You exercise it, you get a little more. You don't want to have it, that's fine. 212-209-2900, this is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there. Oops. 212-209-2900, let's take another one. Hi, you're on the air, this is Armand DeMille.
Hello?
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 Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't even realize I made a connection. Armand, this is Heidi.
Hello, Heidi.
I don't know where to start, but I've always felt like I've never been a disciplined person. And I think that gave me, I mean, my parents and my family put very negative labels on me, and I'm sort of wondering, does discipline have anything to do with, like, a lack of responsibility, or is that a separate issue?
Well, what do you mean? Give it to me for you. Do you, a lack of a sense of responsibility, you know, if people try to put discipline on you too much, you sometimes just don't want to take any responsibility, you know? I mean, that's the whole thing. Are you somebody who has difficulty organizing things?
Oh, yes, I have terrible difficulty organizing things, but I was not unhappy with myself, really, in the way that I was, but then my family just started putting labels on me, and I think I bought into, you know, some of this stuff. But recently I was having a conversation with my friend, and I was remembering me when I was more free-spirited, and it was so nostalgic. I was homesick for that part of myself that just loved to go into the city and be part of the culture and the excitement and the stimulation, and I was thinking, gee, my life doesn't look anything like that now. I don't know where I
went. Oh, my God, is your house very organized now?
No, it's not. I'm still living out, I'm an artist, and so and I live in a shoebox, and I have art supplies all over the place. It's very hard for me to be disciplined in that way.
Sure. Sure. So if you need to reach for a paint, you could find a paint. If you need to reach for a canvas, you could reach, you find a canvas, you could find your stuff. But your mind is kind of free within the limit of where it is.
Yes.
In that shoebox. You know, you realize if we get you a bigger room, you may not be as creative?
Possible.
You know?
Or I might have paint in more places. I don't know.
So I'm sorry your family can't appreciate you for being the kind of free spirit you are. And I understand that what happens is, if you're an artist, you must run into financial difficulties.
Oh, poor, like most artists are.
And if you're poor, then you turn to your family and you say, "Oh, I'm poor. I could barely eat." And they say, "Well, if you don't want us to support you, what you got to do is." Now, this is what happens when people who decide to live on the artistic edge go to their families. They get advice.
Yeah.
And now the advice is kind of, it's almost like it comes out of their powerlessness. They don't know what to do. So they start calling you names and telling you what's wrong with you, and, you know, and it's the problem is trying to cure them of the fact that they have to fix your problem.
Yeah, I let go of my family to a certain extent a long time ago because I got tired of getting picked at. But I just feel like there's this dual thing happening because even though I'm separated from them physically, I think I'm living out some echoes. Because some of my free spirit, I don't know where it went. It just seems to be like latent. I don't know where it went.
When's the last time you took your mother out for a beer?
Well, she passed away, but let's see. I don't know.
You miss her, don't you?
I do. It wasn't a good parting. It wasn't a good parting at all.
Does she have a grave site?
She does, but it's not where I can get to. It's far away.
How far away?
I you know, pray to her, and I have like a little altar in my
house.
Yeah,
I could hear. I could see. That's why I asked the last time you had a beer with your mother. Sounds like that's what you do with your altar, right?
My altar is pretty cool. It has a lot of stuff on it. Yes.
I'm sure. Well, there's a thing about it. There's a thing I sense that's happening, and I think what you're saying about repeating stuff is taking right there in the altar. What if you were, and I'm going to ask you this, and I know it's almost like I'm asking you to sacrifice something. What if you took the altar down for 3 days?
Mm-hmm.
And just took it completely down, and if you could, move it outside of your apartment, give somebody all the ingredients of your altar for 3 days.
Yeah.
And then open your windows and let the air come through your house and let it just clean out your apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can put your altar back if you want. But remove it from your house.
Okay.
You know, just...
What is the symbolism of that?
The symbolism is that there's a thing that happens when you keep mom in that particular position without any movement that stops the movement of the air around you. So I want to see you in your own movement, in your own creativity. Try my experiment. And would you let me know how that goes? Because it's really easy. You could box everything, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So just box it up, bring it over to a friend's house, say, I'm going to leave it here 3 days. It requires three 24-hour periods. And then you could just take it back and put it back right where it was. But in the time that it's gone, open all your windows. Let the air come through.
Okay. I will let you know what happens.
Thanks a lot for calling in.
Thank you.
Sure. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi.
Hello.
Hello there.
Is this Armand?
Yes, it is.
Oh, hi. I was calling about the show. My name is Rich, by the way. I'm just calling about the concept of the self-discipline you're referring to today?
Yeah, yes, Rich.
Yeah, I'm actually someone that more or less does not have any of that.
None of it.
Yeah, I mean, I've tried, but, you know, every time you... I try to focus or go into something specific, it's always like, there's always something else coming up.
Yes, okay, so that happens. There are certain minds that tend to be so flexible that they're always moving from one place to the other, no matter where they are.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you something about this, too, as well. When you were a kid, I know it's going to sound like I'm asking everybody about their fathers, what was the greatest pain you had with your father?
Greatest pain?
Pain, yeah, the greatest pain.
Maybe getting whipped.
He hurt you, huh?
But that's par for the course. I mean, everyone I knew got whipped, so.
Well, that doesn't say much, you know, even though everybody gets whipped. I got whipped, too, but it didn't make a difference that everybody else got whipped. It's like, you got whipped. When you got whipped and when you got punished and when it was hurting so much and when he was that way for you, did you ever feel it was unjust?
Maybe once or twice.
Yeah. What happened to your dad eventually? Did you ever get to know him?
Not really. I mean, he finally moved away and he passed away. But I got to see him before he died. Like 3 days before he died, I got to see him after about, I don't know, 18 or so years or something.
So what I've learned, Rich, over time is that there's a concept of manhood that men have to develop. And they develop it over time, and the way they develop it, usually the way everybody gets it, is you get it naturally in a nurturing relationship with your father. When a man has a nurturing relationship with his father, he develops a sense of manhood, not only his father's kind, but his own kind, that enables him to go into the world and feel like he's a peer, that he could be there in the world just about with anybody. When that's absent, when the father is either brutal or not available, the child becomes kind of like a locked-in adolescent who is resenting all of the structures of the world and can't tolerate the structures. The healing for this seems to be trying to make peace with the man inside you, and it's a very difficult thing to do. There's a wonderful series of programs called the Men's Series, which was available during one of our BAI fund drives. I don't think it's any longer available, but I would recommend calling them and seeing if it's available, and if not, calling us, and we'll see how to make it available for you.
Right.
It was 10 CDs about this very struggle, and what I've learned from men is that the men who go through these 10 programs and listen to them and try them on for size find a little more compassion for themselves, because you're a man who grew up without a dad. And you could say, yeah, a lot of people grow up without a dad, but how are you supposed to get by in the world? How are you supposed to be a father? How are you supposed to be successful? How? You know, you got to make it up in your own mind.
Yeah, you just find a way.
Yeah, or you just get by the way
you
do.
Or you just get by with it, yeah.
With the way you do, and I'm sure.
Well, I think the problem, too, is living with someone who is taking care of you, but it's not your biological dad, and having your biological dad be somewhere else, and then losing one, and then having to get to know the other one, which you really can't do because that person wasn't around, but yet they're mad at you that you can't really, you know, make the effort, I guess, to get to know. It's just
to accept him as well, you know.
Yeah, it's just a big it's just nonsense after a while because everyone is an adult. And
well, in a way, it is.
You know, you just accept what it is, and it's cool. Everyone should just be chill with it. But then you have that, and then you have your, your mother's side who's trying to get you to do something else. And
Richard, sounds like you're tossed in every possible direction, and some part of you is just saying, I'm going to fight it. I'm not giving in to anybody.
Still trying not to give in to anyone, but it's hard. It's hard dealing with your mom because I think she has like past things she's trying to resolve too, and so it's a respect fight with her and where you are, and it's a whole lot of, I guess, unnecessary nonsense is what I call it. But since we had the topic today, I figured I would call and just drop my two cents about, you know.
Have you ever tried, Rich? Have you ever tried to really talk to her, like go to counseling with your mom and say, look, let's talk this over?
No. I can't. I don't think I can really do that.
You think it's impossible?
Yeah, it's not.
Why?
Really possible. Because she's not someone that would really be one up for that. She'll just do what she's known, and she, past habit has her do, so.
Yeah, I hear.
Someone who's like totally into religion constantly, and you can't discuss anything outside of your concept of, based on religion, how the world is and how the world runs. Well, you know. It's a lost cause. You just have to let that person do whatever they do, and you try to figure your way around them.
So it's kind of sad. It's kind of sad because it means not only figure out your way around them, you got to figure out your way without them. You're saying she's gone to religion.
Oh, yeah, she's always been there, and yeah. we can't have any discussions based on that.
Yeah, I'm sorry for you. So you need to find a place where you could have some genuine discussions with people that show who your true heart is that's not with your mom. You got to move it on the outside, and it's going to make it very difficult for you to have relationships with people because, you weren't trained with your dad on how to handle the world. You're not trained with your mom on how to have a relationship. So,
well, I do have relationships with people. You know, I have a beautiful little kid. You know, I'm married, so it's not that bad.
Okay, so it took a push for you, but you got there, huh, Rich?
Yeah. I mean, all this other stuff is still always there because, you know, that baggage can't really leave if...
You're going to have to sort out your priorities.
Yeah, you know,
I hear you've got to sort out your priorities, and my suspicion is that you're stuck trying to prioritize your mother and your child and your wife. And you're trying to give them priorities, and you're giving your mom a little too much priority.
I'm trying not to.
I know you're trying not to.
I deal with her very little. I deal with her extremely little. And whenever she's around, the emotional thing is off the charts. I lose.
Yeah,
it,
she occupies a lot of space.
Yeah, so that's pretty negative as far as.
So if you have a wife, you said.
Yeah.
Does your wife believe in a fire? If there was one person to save, who would you save, your mother or your wife? What does your wife believe?
I would have to save my wife.
Your wife believes that if there was a fire and you were going to carry out one person, and it was a choice of you, her, or your mother, you would carry her out?
Yeah, I think so.
Good.
Well, she believes, of course, I'll try to save myself first always, but yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay, nice talking to you, Rich. Thanks for calling in.
Cool.
Priorities, my friends, real priorities. You know, I met a man today. I met a couple yesterday, and the one thing they said to each other is you couldn't hear the word love there at all. You don't prioritize each other. The idea of having a mate is to prioritize. Now, it's very easy when you become part of a family that you have to discipline who gets what, who gets what do I get? But here's the rule of the game, right? The way it works is your very first priority is your dedication to yourself. You must be committed to yourself. That's number one. Number two, you are committed to your mate. Whoever you choose as your mate, that's because that's your mate. That's your commitment. Whoever your mate is, that's your commitment. Number three is the children. You never choose the children over your mate. You never choose your mate over yourself. But you never choose the children over your mate. If you find yourself choosing the children over your mate, your marriage is in trouble. Family's going to have a problem. Number four comes family. Now, family, the one thing you never want to do is choose family over your mate. And then choose family over your children. Oh, that's a disaster as well. And number five come friends. Now, friends are great, and it's wonderful to have friends, but do you choose your friends over your family? Do you choose your friends over your mate? Do you choose your friends over your children? No, they're in the fifth tier. So the idea of these confused priorities, to me, is part of what happens to people, and they don't get, when they think about disciplining themselves, they think about, you know, what are my priorities? And once you find your priority, as we've learned, it's best to stick with one just for a period of time and exercise that muscle so that you could have the dedication with your primary. See? This is Armand DeMille with you with a positive mind. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. Let's say we let you out here today with something very special from the 50s. From Michael G. Haskin, we are going to play, oh, what a nice thing. What a nice thing. Let's lighten up the mood. Is the sun coming out? Do you think spring has arrived or not? I think it did. I think it did. I'm putting the plants out. This is Armand DeMille with me. You can reach me at armand@thepositivemind.com or the website, thepositivemind.com. Back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends.